music of the Salvation Army by way of a very special introduction to our guests. Commissioners Jim and Carolyn Naggs recently assumed command of the Salvation Army in all of Australia, barring New South Wales and Queensland. Why not New South Wales and Queensland? Well, the only difference I can find between the rest of Australia and the East is the football code. So perhaps deep in the history of the Salvation Army is a rivalry over football to coincide with numerous other differences between Melbourne and Sydney. Jim and Carolyn Naggs, welcome to Sunday Night on ABC Radio.
Thank you, John. It's great to be with you.
Hello, John.
Lovely to have you with us. Now, you've both, we can tell by your accents, recently arrived from the United States, from New York, I understand.
That's correct. We moved here August 1st, actually, 2006, and we have made our home in Melbourne.
Is there a challenge in coming to a new country, although as leaders in the Salvation Army, I guess you get pushed around internationally a fair bit, but in coming to a new country to take charge, it's like sort of a bit of a dip in a bath of cold water, Jim Naggs.
John, the Salvation Army, as you would probably recall, exists in at least 111 countries around the world. When the general called us and asked us to serve in Australia, we thought we really landed on our feet. There are a lot of other options out there, and we are really happy to be here.
That's something the Salvation Army as a Protestant church shares almost uniquely with the Catholic Church, in that it's an international structure. It's not based on sort of local little bits and pieces where you can sort of basically spend your life in one place. The Salvation Army has this global view of itself.
It's terrific.
It not only has a global view, but there's a global code, you know, that our mission and our method are the same worldwide. And the way we carry it out is culturalized, but our goals are to serve the Lord and to bring others into an understanding of His love and of His grace and to meet people at their human needs. And that happens all over the world, in the name of the Lord, by the Salvation Army. It's really wonderful.
One of the interesting characteristics of the Salvation Army is this unique, almost unique for a Protestant evangelical denomination, of this twin aspect of being sort of radically evangelical. And older listeners will recall Salvation Army bands marching the streets and Salvationists holding street meetings where they preached the gospel in the streets. Yet as equal and vigorous a commitment to social welfare, to helping the underprivileged. Jim Naggs, has that come under stress over recent years? Because it seems an unusual, given the history of the past sort of 50 years as you look at churches, an unusual thing to hold together so aggressively.
It really is unique, John, and because of that, we're a hard group to define. We don't really fit purely in the camp of the church, and we don't fit purely in the camp of the social service agency. But the hybrid of it all serves God, we believe, so terrifically well. They connect beautifully. And really, in most of the stories of people's lives, it's hard to tell where the social arm of the Salvation Army and the general or spiritual arm of the army begins and where the other ends. It's very unique. And in these days, we find our tensions very much in that. Through the years, we have had, by necessity and by good practice, we have had to professionalize our social work and our social services so that we're very strong and advanced in the latest techniques and the latest relationships in social work. And what that has happened, it took us from our roots, where we started our social work as a mission from the heart, and it compelled us to begin to embrace other support people and workers who didn't quite have the same heart as the dynamic Christian mission movement of the Salvation Army. And so, of necessity, we've had to go this other direction. And in these days, we find ourselves with this tension, as you've mentioned, towards a mission integration to bring them back together tight and close where they belong and where they serve both sides so very well.
Most Australians would the Salvation Army in Australia has had a consistently high reputation over more than 100 years. When the Salvation Army first arrived in Australia in the 1880s, it went from nothing to being the third largest Protestant denomination in 20 years. Now, that didn't sustain itself, but there was something there about that integration between the spiritual and the physical that seemed to resonate with ordinary folk on the streets. Yet the Salvation Army today doesn't quite resonate in the same way. I mean, people still love the Salvation Army, but the Salvation Army is no longer the third largest Protestant church. Where do you put the problem down to there? I mean, some people would say, well, look, the Salvation Army just got trapped in very quaint uniforms and sort of brass bands and all the bits and pieces of Victoriana and never really kept itself attuned to where the culture was going.
I think that's a fair question, and one that we would still be wrestling with. A lot of it would come to some of the eccentricities of being this military-type movement. And when you think of going to church on Sunday, the average person anywhere, but particularly here in Australia, isn't thinking of putting on a military-type uniform to worship God. Now, all of our people don't do that, of course, but you still have this this appearance and this aspect of the Salvation Army. We do wear our uniforms proudly, because we want to witness to people that we love God and that we're available. That's what the uniform is saying when we wear it on the street, or even when we wear it on Sunday in worship. We're saying to people, we're available. You can talk to us. You can trust us. It's amazing to me in Australia how terrific that is. We were in Adelaide not too long ago, riding in a minivan, a six-passenger vehicle. And there were about four or five of us in uniform in the car. And alongside of us came this tram of school kids. And one by one, you could see the school kids look out the window, point to us, and you can read their lips. And they're saying, hey, there are the Salvos. And as that ripple went through the tram, all the kids began to wave and point and all that. John, what that said to me was, these kids trust the Salvation Army. They trust the Salvos, that they know who we are. They recognize us, and they trust us because of the good work that people have done all through these years. So this eccentricity of the uniform still has great value today. I think that had a lot to do with some of the falling away of our numbers and some of the slippages that we've seen through the years. I would say to you that I don't see that the slippages are grossly significant. I think that they are within some of the norms of the Christian church in Australia, at least within the range of it all or the band of it all. But I do see a Salvation Army that's strong, a Salvation Army that is rich and beautiful, disciplined people who love God and want to make a difference in this world.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you, and my guests are Commissioners Jim and Carolyn Nags, recently appointed heads of the Salvation Army in Southern Australia. That's everywhere in the country except New South Wales and Queensland, who follow rugby. And I think, as I said, that's probably the only difference I can distinguish anyway in why such a boundary should exist. Jim and Carolyn, tell us a little bit about yourselves. Carolyn, where did you grow up?
I grew up in central Pennsylvania, United States, and I lived in small country towns until I met this gentleman, James Nags, where we moved, were married and moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And then we spent the next 30 years committing ourselves to the Lord and joining the Salvation Army and becoming ordained ministers. And the Lord and the Salvation Army had us living in Philadelphia and in New York City for most of that time. So I would say that we're sort of East Coasters personified.
And Jim, you're not only an ordained minister and a fairly experienced administrator with Salvation Army welfare budgets in the U.S. being fairly prodigious. You're also a musician.
Well, John, of sorts. I raised in the Army, one is always tempted to learn how to play a brass instrument, so that I've enjoyed playing my horn for all these years. I'd play a little piano and love music thoroughly.
Yes, well, you don't underrate yourself. You did play with one of the Salvation Army's better international combinations, the New York Staff Band, for a few years.
It was great, and because of that, we visited Australia twice, once in the 80s, once in the 90s, and that was my introduction to Australia, by playing in the brass band of the Salvation Army.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the challenges facing yourselves as people over the years, because life isn't always an easy and smooth ride. You've both faced challenges to your own ministry and your own sense of God over the years. Your journey hasn't been easy, even in your family life, Jim. No, I don't want to push that too far, but there has been some tragedy associated with the journey for you too.
There, you know, life does have its turns, and but John, the grace of God is sufficient through all these days. Let me just say that. But one of the most difficult moments in our life happened when our three-year-old son, our youngest boy, we have three sons, our youngest boy at the age of three was hit by a car in front of our house, and we lost him. We didn't think we would ever recover, and I guess we haven't fully recovered. But as I've said, God's grace has been sufficient to our souls, and the joy is renewed and restored in our lives. That's been a difficult part of our journey. And then Carolyn's sister and her husband, who were also officers in the Salvation Army, dropped their kids off at our house, their three kids, on their way to heaven, as Carolyn likes to say. And so we brought into the family two more boys and a girl. We brought them in their teenage years, and that's been very exciting and has changed our lives significantly.
Carolyn, you, Jim, again, delicately touched on that, but that must have been an extraordinary period for you, not only to lose your own child, but then have your sister and her husband both die and to take their family into your family. What sort of a challenge was that for you?
Well, I think any time families are blending together, you know, there are some really difficult days. My sister's children had watched their mother be ill, actually, for 10 years. She died of breast cancer. And in that journey of, you know, they were like in grade one and grade two when my sister became ill. And I became, you know, sort of her support group. And for all of those years, actually, I took her for chemo treatments and you know, walked that whole journey with her. And in the middle of this experience, her husband died. He was diagnosed with lung cancer and died within 6 months of this diagnosis. And then my sister survived five more years and, you know, did her best to keep the family together. And I actually moved into their house a few months before she'd left us, to try to make a transition with the children. And when the kids came to live with us, Michael was 21 and Stephen was 16 and Allison was 15. So, you know, these poor kids had lost both of their parents, you know, within the 5 years. And now they were in a strange land, really, with us. And the first year was really, really a difficult journey for us. Actually, Allison really didn't speak to me that year. She would come home from school every day and walk straight into her bedroom and lock the door. She would emerge about two hours later and say to me, "What's for dinner?" So I began to make a whole conversation into what I was cooking for dinner just to try to, you know, engage her. She would have her dinner and back to her room she would go. And, well, it's been 7 years since the kids have been with us, so our relationship is very different now. It's beautiful. you know, we're connected with the kids very much. Actually, our oldest nephew, Michael, is going this week on his third tour to Afghanistan. He's in the U.S. military, and he goes back into harm's way again for another 15-month tour. So,
he's a combat medic, John. Yeah.
I can't imagine how that would an experience like that would affect one. One can only reflect from an outsider's perspective on the extent to which that must have been a challenge to your own faith. Surely your sister and brother-in-law, Carolyn, would have asked the big question, you know, where is God in all of this, particularly as they were Salvation Army officers. And you must have been called upon to answer that question for them and then to answer it for yourself as well.
Well, you know what's interesting is that my sister, both Alan and Norma Jean were active officers in the Salvation Army. And upon my brother-in-law's death, my sister was an associate officer at a wonderful corps in Hempstead, Long Island. And she made a decision one day, like God really intervened in her healing process. And she said, she called me on the phone and she said, you know what I've decided? I choose joy. I want to live. My heart is broken, but I want to live. And actually the congregation had quite a laugh about every Sunday when she preached, and she preached every Sunday night at this corps. She preached on the subject of joy. The book of Philippians, I mean. She spoke on Philippians, and, you know, even all these years later, people can recite some of her sermons. They were so authentic, so beautiful. She was a wonderful encourager to anybody who was around her. As a matter of fact, as she was on her deathbed, I mean, literally, she was summoning the young people from the Corps to remind them that they needed to walk in the way of God and that she was going to see him soon. She was going to mention their names. And, you know, she wanted to pray with them before she left. And it was just unbelievable. Her bed, you know, like her bedside became like an altar. She was amazing. She was an amazing person. I really
miss her. You seem to have gained some strength out of that yourself.
Oh, there's no question.
Jim, were you ever caused to sort of ask the big questions in those sorts of situations?
Yeah. I'll tell you, another interesting thing happened, John, with another sister-in-law who died of cancer in around the same time and still young at age somewhere. I think Rhonda was about 40 or 42. But we were in her hotel room. In her hospital room. And Rhonda was on steroids and she was on morphine. And that meant she wasn't feeling any pain and she was real chatty.
Very chatty.
So she was having trouble leaving because she didn't want to leave her kids, even though that she knew she was dying of cancer. And so she said, Jim, I need some help with it. So I read a passage from the Word that spoke about the realities that a day in heaven is like 1,000 years on earth. She said, you mean to tell me that before the day is over in heaven, my whole family is going to join me there? I said, well, Rhonda, I think that's what that means. She said, on that basis, I'm ready to go. So with that, she took a deep breath, and within a few hours, she took her journey to glory because she had the satisfaction that her children, who all knew the Lord, would be joining her within the next 1,000 years, and that was at least one day. That was just one day in heaven.
You're on Sunday Night. We're speaking with Commissioners Jim and Carolyn Nags, recently appointed commanders of the Salvation Army in the Southern Territory of Australia. That's everywhere except New South Wales and Queensland. Well, let's talk about the wide brown land and your experience, your brief experience here thus far, Jim and Carolyn Nags. Next week, the Salvation Army have their annual Red Shield appeal. What are the priorities for this year?
Well, John, I wish I could tell you tonight that we were doing such a fantastic job that the country of Australia doesn't need the Salvation Army as much this year as before. But that wouldn't be true. The truth is, we are doing a great job, and people that we have helped don't need us nearly as much as they did before. But in the society that we live, there remains more and more people who need our kind of help, who need our kind of support for basic necessities in life. It's an amazing thing to me how here and around the world, but here in Australia, where things are so well, the economy is doing so well, that there are so many people that are finding it so difficult to make ends meet, to pay their rents, to buy groceries, to take care of matters. Then, of course, you have folks who make decisions and find themselves in addictions and alcohol addictions and drug addictions and gambling addictions. And these people are regularly need our kind of support. And then you have people who are victimized by the environment, where the rains haven't come for such a long time. And you have farmers and their families. These are people who have been contributors to society their entire lives, proud people, people who have always been strong and held their place, and they're still strong, and they're still holding their place. But the truth is, they need a little extra help now because they've gone so long without the rain that they need to make their ends meet. So there are needs all over this country that the Army is trying to meet by the grace of God.
The Army is strong on delivery of services, and that's a hallmark of the Salvation Army for over 100 years. In fact, it's as you said earlier, it's what makes the uniform resonate with people on the street. Yet the Army's founder, William Booth, was one of those who said, is it not better to put a fence at the top of the cliff than have the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff? To what extent is the Salvation Army, along with other churches, find it a bit challenging these days to be the, if you like to use the biblical phrase, the prophetic voice and challenge the structures of society before it has to go in with the ambulance?
That happens to be one of the things I particularly like about Australia, is that the Salvos and the other churches in Australia have the courage to stand up and to confront these issues on the front side and not afraid to take an opinion or a position opposing other very strong forces in our society. Issues of gambling, issues of drinking, alcoholism particularly, where the Army, the Salvos, and the Church will stand up and hold our positions. Issues of human trafficking. John, this human trafficking thing is a real thing, and mostly young girls are being taken and put into slavery. And mostly men are taking advantage of them, and we're binding together and standing up against this kind of behavior. And we're trying to stop it before it hurts another person.
What about the broad issues of government policy, particularly in welfare provision? I mean, the Salvation Army is on the front end of seeing the casualties, as you've said, of holes in the welfare safety net. To what extent are the Army these days prepared to get in and be vigorous critics of policy where they see policy at fault?
Look, we'll stand where we have to stand. And when we're still giving out, in a typical week in Australia, 100,000 meals, when we're still giving refuge to 500 victims of abuse, where we're still giving assistance to 1,000 people in prisons in the court system, where we're providing 5,000 beds in the course of a week of people who are homeless, these are signals that something is not working. Some people are coming through the net. And again, the beauty here in Australia is that the church and the army, the Salvos, are able to stand up to government and say, please, let's get this straight. Now, John, without sounding, I don't want to sound just terribly nice, but the government does have its hands full in delivering service in the systems that they're confronted with. And groups like the Salvation Army, we're a little bit more stealth. We're a little bit more direct. I dare say we're more efficient in service delivery in that the dollar that we spend, so much more of it goes directly to the service. And the government doesn't have that luxury. There are a lot of other things and complications in their systems But, you know, we work with the government in many cases, John. We have a number of government programs, and they give funding to a lot of what we do. And so it is a good partnership. We are asking just now that there might be really more of a partnership where we're more at the table of how these issues are being handled in our society today.
Jim and Carolyn Nags, you face adjustment to a new country coming in and looking not only at the society and the challenges which confront it, but the challenges of your own leadership of a church. The Salvation Army is a worshipping community. There are issues there that you must face as well. We've already spoken about the general decline in attendance in churches since the high point of the 1960s, and that the Salvation Army's attendances reflect generally what has also happened in the other churches. But are there unique challenges that face movements such as the Salvation Army at a time when the relevance of the church to society is being questioned? Large sections of society these days regard the church as totally irrelevant.
I hear you, John, and Carolyn, you do too. I think what we're thinking just now is that we've got to watch out for the vestiges of what we have considered important and sacred, the structures of what we do, because the truth is the gospel itself is always relevant. The gospel of God's love for people for everyone. It's God's plan that they would know his love and be set free from their inhibitions and free from the oppressors in their lives and set free from the traps that many people find themselves in with economic pressures and addictions and things like that. God wants to set them free. That's relevant for today. That's the gospel we want to preach and what we do. But it is hard work to move the whole organization, the whole movement, and to move towards change so as to address today's needs and today's issues.
John, I think there's also a very large issue here of the cultural influences, you know, of the way life should be. And, you know...
Yes, to elaborate on that a little bit, I mean, 60 years ago, 50 years ago, you didn't have the all-pervasive influence of television.
Now,
have a self-sustaining community in which parents and the church were the voices on which children modelled their lives. These days, parents, the church, and schools are the last things kids would get their influences from. The primary one is the television set.
Right. Well, and I think that it really is moving us towards articulating clearly the value of the family and how you can live that out in your workplace, at home with your kids, and how the worshiping community really is there. It's designed to give us support. And I do think that many years ago, probably a lot of us went to church just because we had to. You know, you were supposed to do that. And, you know, we would have two or three meetings on a Sunday. And life is different than that now. That while these options are still open, at the core that we attend, there are five services on a Sunday. And actually what that's done is that it gives you the option of, you know, when does your time fit that schedule? You know,
and actually that speaks to some of the ways that some of our folks are trying to adjust to the fresh culture.
That's true. And so it is opening a door. It is giving us the privilege and the opportunity to meet many different groups of people, meaning, we have kids church at our core. And then there's this young adult service that happens for young families in the morning. And then there's the traditional worship, you know, where the band and the songsters are there. And also we have a service in Korean and in Chinese. And there's small group Bible studies that are available for people who have to work on Sunday. So I think that we're trying to adapt to this unbelievable schedule of everyone's lives. You know, the kids have to go to footy practice, and, you know, we have to do this, and we have to. There's just so many options available that we're hoping that we can still and still put in the hearts of our congregation that the coming together in the worship is still has such great value. It has great value for inspiration. It has value for family support. It has value, you know, if you're alone, here's a whole group of people that are of almost the same mind. You know, we're singing the same songs. We're listening to the same wonderful music. We're hearing the word of God presented to us. So we're trying to, every place that we go to visit, and we visit all over the country. We're in little country towns. We've been down in Tassie. We've been up in the Northern Territory. We've been in Perth. We've been in Adelaide. You know, we've been everywhere in Victoria, it seems. And what we are seeing is that there are real dynamic components happening in the worship service to keep, you know, frankly, the attention of this ADD society that we all live in.
John, just the other day we went to Mooney Ponds and witnessed a program called Mainly Music. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was really terrific. In this program that a lot of the Salvos do, they have a leader, and they bring together mothers and like preschoolers, like, you know, 2-3-year-olds kind of thing. I think it's like up to age 5. And they go through a half-hour program, and I think it's mostly a half-an-hour program. And they do these different songs, and they do drumming, and they do dancing, and they do all these exercises. It is a time of just total joy and excitement. And part of that is that that's so they're ministering to these people during that time. These people may never get there on a Sunday, but they have been there during the week at the Salvation Army in these very special programs. Last year, in our territory alone, there were 80,000 people in those Mainly Music programs.
It's a way of getting the message across in all sorts of by all sorts of means. But as you said, that message has to be coherent. Now, we've got just a few minutes before we have to wind this interview up. So I guess it's appropriate to ask, what for you, in all that diversity, is the one coherent message that you want Salvationists themselves to understand about the mission of the Salvation Army, and you want them to communicate to the broad public?
I think that's unconditional love, John. First of all, God has an unconditional love for us. It just doesn't matter what condition we're in. It doesn't matter how bad we think we are, or even how good we think we are. God loves us in spite of those conditions. It's unconditional love. And then I would say to Salvos and to other believers who stand with us, God needs us to express unconditional love. And we need to love people regardless of their age, regardless of their creed, regardless of their race, regardless of their education, regardless of their place in life. It's about love, John. I think we want to go deeper into God's love. I think we want to be wider in the influence of God's love.
Which is fine to talk about unconditional love and the way you do it, but you've got a broadly spaced movement across Australia, the Salvation Army spread right across Australia. You've got to, in some ways, you have to communicate that to people effectively, and it's not just about feeling nice inside. It's about doing things through the programs of the movement, through the programs of the organisation. How do you get people to cohere on that stuff these days?
Well, John, you're spot on with this question. We are planning a very special event in November, November 23, 24, 25, when the General of the Salvation Army, that is the international leader of the Salvation Army, will be in Melbourne. And together, we are bringing all of our people in, and we're asking the community to join us for a weekend that we're calling Connections 2007. We want to make strong and fresh connections with God. We want to make strong and fresh connections with each other. And we want to make strong and fresh connections with the community at large. It goes back to the question you asked moments ago when you talked about standing with the Christian community. We're calling the entire Christian community. We're calling those who have interests in these important issues of today to join us and to stand with us together boldly so that this world will know that we intend to make it better.
Jim and Carolyn Nags, thanks for joining us on Sunday night.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. God bless you.